Hi, my name is Salema Mabena Masakela. I'll say it for you one more time. Salema Mabena Masakela. And you are listening to the What Shapes Us podcast. Welcome back to the What Shapes Us podcast, a podcast hosted by one Mr. Salema Mabena Masakela. That is me. I'm calling this series of conversations the COVID files, I realize, because these episodes, they're all conversations that I've got in where I can fit them in during the lusciousness that was the lockdown of 2020 and 2021 in its various shades, shapes, and sizes. This episode is dedicated to the streamed non-human attendance version of Lollapalooza that took place in 2020, was it? 2020? It was 2020. 2021. It wasn't 2022. Let's just agree on that. But anyway, through my work at the Red Bull Media House, where I serve as a host for many different programs, from commentating events like the Vulcan Pipeline Pro surfing event, or Travis Rice's snowboarding extravaganza, Natural Selection, or Rampage, the legendary mountain bike event in Utah. On top of that, I've gotten to host the live streams of some pretty fantastic music festivals for like the last 6 or 7 years, up until COVID-19 entered the chat. So I would go and do the live stream for Lollapalooza and Bonnaroo, just to name a couple, and Austin City Limits as well. A blast, you know. 4 days interviewing some of my favorite musicians and also getting to know new artists. Super fun. I had a set that it was literally called Sal's World, back when I still went by my nickname. And yeah, I love music, as you know. I also record music under my alternative title, Alakazam, which is Masakela backwards. So music is, I love music just as much as I love surfing, snowboarding, or skateboarding. Obviously, with my father being the musician that he was, it's really all I've ever known. I mean, my earliest memories of life with my dad was literally in jazz clubs at like 5, 6 years of age at 2 a.m. I was in the club till like 3 a.m. on the weekends when my dad had me, like watching musicians steal the souls of the patrons who were there to blow off steam after their long week. I didn't know they were having long weeks because I was 5 years old. I just thought that's what people did on a regular basis and that it was normal for a kid like me to be there. Anyway, I fell in love with music, fell in love with live music as a result. So when Red Bull was like, hey, do you want to do music festivals? I was like, yes, stop talking. Or as they say these days, say less. Say less, Red Bull. You got me. Say less. The answer is yes. So anyway, in this episode, I got a chance to talk to a guy that I've known for almost 30 years. Incredible photographer by the name of Atiba Jefferson, who had done some photo work for Lollapalooza, for this Lollapalooza. I got to, and his work was featured in the stream. We got to have a conversation. I literally known Atiba since he was selling skateboards in Colorado. I met him on the phone when I worked at Transworld Skateboarding Magazine. We talk about that in this conversation. He's the most prolific skate photographer I believe, that's ever lived. I mean, he was came under the tutelage of the great Grant Britain. But what Atiba Jefferson has done to chronicle modern skateboarding is pretty much unmatched. Incredible documentary that he did specifically about Black skateboarding. That is awesome. And because of what it requires to be a skate photographer, you just have to be able to hustle and create on the fly and, move around with lights and dodge police, et cetera, and security guards, and get all the conditions right to get, a perfect image. When you're someone like Atiba, you just become not just a great skate photographer, but just a great photographer. And in turn, he's gotten to go ahead and shoot, you name it, biggest musicians, athletes. We talk a little bit in this conversation about the NBA players that he's gotten to shoot, his relationship with Kobe, etc. Just the through line is about connecting with your passion and what you're willing to do to see it through. It's not an overnight thing, especially in our society, where because of social media, you see everyone's finished product and everyone wants to go like, okay, well, how do I get there to where I'm doing what you're doing? That's just for the gram. You have some living that you need to do and some failing that you need to do if you would like to have these results. So anyway, enjoy on the What Shapes Us podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Slema Masekela, and this is a What Shapes Us conversation with one of my dear friends and iconic photographer, Atiba Jefferson.
How are you, man?
Dude, I'm well. I'm well in a wild world.
Yeah, it's crazy times we're living in right now, that's for sure. Staying positive, though. There's, ups and downs throughout this period.
There's ups and downs throughout this, but there's like, within all of the chaos, there's immense amounts of opportunity.
Yeah, no, I've myself been pretty amazed at seeing people adapt to their situation and what they have going. I mean, people are resilient in that sense that, like, they can kind of figure it out. Some people are, some people aren't. I mean, even as much as, like, unemployment relief and stimulus, like, it's interesting to see in the skate world, skate shops are doing way better online selling product because a lot of these skaters now have time and a little bit of coin to pay for stuff. So, that's an interesting thing alone, right? Like,
right.
I've never seen skateboarding go through this wave of, people even saying, hey, if you have extra Spitfires, can you bring them to the shop? Because the only bummer is that the manufacturers are actually shut down because of the pandemic.
Right.
So manufacturing has stopped. So now right. There's a shortage of boards and wheels. So it is interesting, but also with the movement, I mean, I think it's been beautiful and amazing, painful. I think we've all been, shedding layers of issues, social issues that shedding and dealing with all these social issues over so many years of different layers that now are coming to surface. So it's crazy.
There's something about, you bring up a great point. Like, there's something about all these different subcultures within our society that have been, like you said, dealing with these layers over time, but we've never had the space to like deal with them as a whole, like wholly address with attention, because we've always had other things that we can be busy with. But right now it feels like that's not an option. And I feel like in skateboarding, I'm watching it take place in a really beautiful, radical way, the way there's just been like this huge shift to look towards like, okay, we're going into like mega expansion inclusion mode, and we're going to put everything on the same level when it comes to like what skateboarding is, in a way that I'd never really seen that so radically as is happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the beauty of skateboarding and, you know, color boundaries, gender boundaries, it's, you know, skateboarders are oppressed people, period. You know, it's outlawed. Society looks down on it. So in that sense, the struggle has always been there. And I think that's why the compassion, no matter what race or culture or gender that you come from, skateboarding has always been compassionate. I've never really felt racism inside. I mean, there's little points, but it's been just so amazing to learn from mistakes in the past, I think, in skateboarding, that are things that people just didn't really realize and notice. But also, I think the amazing thing is the fact that we as a whole are coming together, and there's protests, there's, you know, this newest issue of Thrasher that I worked on, which was great because, you know, it's a whole issue celebrating Black skateboarding. And, you know, that has been done in the past, but not under this microscope of the way we're looking at things now. But, you know, all the way to, like, I have a collabo coming out with Baker of a board series that, you know, we're doing 100 of these boards. There's 4 different ones. All proceeds are going to go to a foundation supporting Black Lives Matter. And that's going to net $40,000. So, you know, for me, I've already, you know, Oakley has been huge in making donations on my behalf, you know, so Jägermeister, so many different people have been, you know, coming, that have always been a part of my life, you know, through skateboarding, have been like, hey, how can we support your cause? How can we support what's going on? And this is not just a one-time thing. And I don't even have to call people on that. People are already bringing that up. Like, hey, we're this movement is now and forever, not just one moment. So that's what's been amazing in skateboarding. But, you know, it's Black skateboarding has been such like a huge impact on me as a skater, because as a kid, it was so white dominant, and it wasn't like that was an issue, but I had the guys that I looked like that I of course gravitated to: Kareem, Javonte, Ray, you know. But the crazy thing is, doing this issue of Thrasher is realizing, when I asked like Sal Barbier, who did you guys look up to? Or even Marty Grimes, the first Black pro skater. They're just like, dudes you never heard of that were also Black that skated. You know, and it's crazy to think about that and how short skating's life is, but also like, you know, it really puts in perspective how impactful the OGs were to skateboarding and the style of skateboarding. I mean, Kareem, it's crazy that you look back, you know, you've known him, you know, as long as I've known him. And you look at the way he did skating, and he gracefully, you know, bowed out in his way. And his career is pretty amazing because, man, he was such a bright light in all of our lives in so many different levels, from being a Black company owner to being, you know, one of the top Black skateboarders. So, you know, it's right now, being someone who's been in skateboarding officially for 25 years, it's was such an amazing project. And then you look at the new future, you know, Ashads and Zions, and, you know, the list is so long. Fit everybody into that issue. Like, that was the problem. It was like, yo.
I was like, it felt like it could be like a quadruple gatefold.
It was like, I mean, that was the bummer, the pandemic, you know, I could only get to so many people and I couldn't expect people to fly. It is so crazy. The funniest story about that is, you know, Tyshawn obviously being a skater of the year, I was like, I need Tyshawn, you know,
but he's in New York.
And I was like, oh, you know, do I fly there? And I literally was like, I'm going to have to fly there. It wouldn't be complete without him, but that's just so much to ask someone. And he's like, I'm coming to LA. And I was like, and then I had an old photo of Kareem that was shot just in the same style. It totally could have worked from literally 2006.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't really age. I'm like hitting him, just like checking in because we did an interview, and he's like, yo, I'm coming to LA.
Wow.
Yeah, I shot Tyshawn and Kareem all in the same day.
You've been posting the individual photos like steadily.
Yeah, well, it was funny. I did the slideshow and then I was like, I'm scrapping that. I'm doing just straight up individuals. Like, everyone needs to shine.
It's been beautiful. It's been beautiful because it represents so many different time stamps of what the Black impact of across skateboarding has been, going back to when there were not that very many of us, but the people who were there were so massively impactful. Yes. To now where it's common, but there's still, it's still like all these skaters that when they do show up and make their mark, it's like, it's such a massive impact.
Yeah. It's funny that when you get the issue, it's been hard for people to find because it's been selling out. But Ray Barbie does an interview in it, and he really breaks it down. He's like, you know, skateboarding is just like a big gumbo. And, you know, he had so many beautiful things to say from, you know, I wanted to be the best skater. I don't want to be the best Black skater, you know. And I thought that was so well put. But you know, he said skateboarding is like a big gumbo and, you know, Black skating is the spice. It's a flavor, you know, and it really is because, like I said, skateboarding is something that we all just look at each other for, you know, being the same and being equal. But it is obviously different. Flavor comes from different places, and Black skateboarding brings such a great flavor to skateboarding, you know, and it's just really nice to celebrate it and you know, hear so many positive things. The feedback from it was just overwhelming. I'm beyond honored to have been able to do something, because I wanted it like, you know, the famous one day in Harlem photo, but you know, we couldn't. I started calling people like, hey, how do you feel about a group? Ah, that's a bad idea. That's not good.
The next one. Can do the next one.
That's the beginning. That's what we told people, because there's been some comments and some people upset that they weren't featured. But, you know, I really hope that this pandemic, we can beat it and quickly get a vaccine and, you know, next year make that issue and actually have time. We did that in 3 weeks. It was the craziest 3 weeks of my life, whereas like normally something like that you would take
months. I mean, the pre-pro something like that.
Like for me, it's an honor because I get to find and track down my favorite skaters, you know? Right. So I still didn't get a chance to meet up with people that I wanted to, so. You know,
next one.
Yeah, 100%.
You talk about your 25 years officially in skateboarding, and you and I met in 1994, and we didn't meet face to face initially. We met on the phones.
Mm-hmm. Because
I worked at Transworld Skateboarding Magazine, and I was in charge of like product sales, and I had a big book that I with like names of shops and like the names of people who were the buyers. And I would call those shops and I'd ask for that name and be like, hey, what's up? Do you want to buy like some t-shirts, some sweatshirts? Like, do you guys have enough magazines, et cetera? And one of those pages were for these two kids in Colorado, Atiba and Akko. And I didn't know that you were brothers or anything about you, but those conversations when I would call shops, you know, you'd have to take time with each other and like learn about what's going on in your world, et cetera. And I just remember the way our friendship was born on the phone and your interest in music and et cetera. And it's a trip to be sitting here now with you 26 years later, having this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all the way to me being at the first Lollapalooza, probably, you know, a little after or a little bit before that. Yeah. I mean, skateboarding was so, I'm so lucky that I worked in a skate shop in the 90s and the early 90s, BC Surf and Sport in my hometown of Colorado Springs. And to look back at, like, I was so giddy that anyone from California I could talk to.
I remember.
You know, like, to get a call from you, it's like, oh, Trans World, you know, my Trans World call, and then Deluxe, got it, Deluxe. And, you know, Yvette Mountain. I would order Firm stuff so much because Yvette and Lance would be the ones calling.
Right.
And it was, you know, pre-internet. So you didn't know, you know, you only saw things from videos and magazines. That was it. So for me, that phone call brought me that much closer. I mean, that was my Instagram, right? That was instant gratification of what we were talking about. And so,
yeah, in those conversations, like, I would put you on to, like, this is who was skating at Climax last week and what the session looked like. And I talked to Grant Britton all the time. And I remember you telling me about your passion, like, for photography at the time, and that it was your dream, you know, to come out and work in California.
Yeah. And it's funny too, cause I use that number to also stalk Grant. Like, it's crazy that you back then could have just called up the photo out of a big publication and be like, hey, it's Atiba. Like, I didn't have anything to say. How do they look? And they sucked. I thought they were the best, but I remember Grant being like, yo, look to see if your photos match what's in the magazine, then you know you're in a good place, quality wise. Yeah. That was the best advice I ever got, probably.
Yeah.
As long as your photos look like they do in the magazine, then you're going to be able to do something. And I really had to, like, check my ego and go, yeah, he's totally right. Like, you know, I need my photos first and foremost, but then I need the action to also be there as well.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember this, but you guys would check in with me as you were driving.
Oh yeah.
You'd be like, hey, we're this far. This is where we're at. And I was like, all right, cool. And then I was waiting for you in the parking lot when y'all, pulled into California, to train for the first time, man.
No, it's so crazy how torturous we must've been. Like, why are these dudes calling me? But now I look back, I was actually going on a little photo that's like the bane of my existence, is looking for old film photos, like just piles and piles and piles. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to get it, but I pulled it to the side in another file. I found like an alphanumeric employee teen shoot.
Whoa.
I found the class, some of the classroom photos, but this was like just y'all, like the squad. And I was like, wow, this will blow minds once I scan this and get this ready for.
I can't wait for that.
About it. We were trying to do a documentary talking about Black skateboarding then. That was what, 98, 99, probably?
That was 98 when we were having those conversations. I was talking to someone the other day. They were like, I didn't know that you were one of the co-founders of Alphanumeric Clothing. Like, how did that start? And I said, it started from a bunch of us, Black people within the skateboarding community, sitting and having these conversations. We would just meet for coffee once a week about trying to do a documentary to capture this story about Black influence in skateboarding. And that's how, from those conversations is how Alphan America was born. And I was like, Atiba and Aqua Jefferson were there. And I was telling people, all the people that would be at these coffee meetings, and their minds are just like, wait, what do you mean?
We were a little bit younger and we weren't, you know, we were still really green to everything. And I look back at being a part of those conversations and those meetings and being like, feeling very special and included in something. And you know, the thing for Thrasher, I wrote an intro, and that's the thing. This is a story that I've been telling since I came into skateboarding because I'm a part of the story, you know? And it's one of those really amazing, beautiful things that I've been able to kind of maneuver in a world where everybody has supported me regardless of the color of my skin and has celebrated me because of the color of my skin. And that's been such a great place to be at. And, you know, coming from Colorado and coming from, you know, a small town where I saw a lot of racism, you know, being one of five Black kids out of school, 400, you know, there was a lot of that growing up with a single white mom. You know, my dad left when I was four. So I had a very different upbringing than, you know, most people of, you know, it's just like, for me, it's always, skateboarding has always been a warm hug for who I am. And that's always been great. And it's really great to celebrate that 25 years later and look at also the improvements that skating can do for the Black community. And even myself, you know, I think, as much of a giving person as I am, this movement has also woke me up to a lot of things that in skateboarding, but also outside in our world, that I can help contribute and make better. And I'm going to do that. You know, I've always been someone trying to make the world the better place, but you know, you can't do enough. No one's ever going to win because it just needs so much help. So, you know, this movement is, just showed me, has showed me so much about how I can be better and contribute. You know, I really, it was funny when the George Floyd incident happened, murder, I should say, I was so hurt. And Eric Gardner, I mean, it always kind of really, I mean, when Eric Gardner happened, I made a post like, why am I watching a Black man die on my phone? And when I watch George Floyd, it's like, how are there, these are snuff films. These should be illegal. It should be illegal to watch this. That it's crazy, you know? And I was really hurt by it. And I was, there was something wrong, but we were in this pandemic. We're not leaving our house. I'm really stewing on these emotions and feelings. And I remember going, I need to do something to feel better. I'm going to go protest. And you know, I've been shooting some skate photos, but like masked up, gloved up, social distance, long lines. And I remember my twin brother is like, yo, what are you doing? And I'm like, I have to do this. Like, I have to make a change. Like, I know, you know, I'm lucky enough to have a social media following that people will see. I'm going to go. And I went to that Pan Pacific protest, the big one that turned into the riot. And I went to it and I felt amazing, but I felt the tension, like I felt it. And people were positive, but this was a weird energy. And, you know, even for me, my first time rioting and protesting something like this was when I was 15. It's on YouTube, actually, in Denver. The KKK decided to have a rally on Martin Luther King Day. And we went up there and, you know, it turned into a riot. I mean, people were started with throwing snowballs and then everything else was thrown, you know. And I got tear gassed. You know, I have some photos. I was very bad at shooting photos, but I have photos of, like, skinheads with KKK banners and all this. So I've been in this situation, and that Pan Pacific felt the same way. And I left. I was like, you know, let me go. I don't want to overdo it because it's a pandemic, right? And so I left. I went skating in the IE, and then I like watched on my phone just LA burning. And, you know, my friends all at that work at Supreme, we're on a group text and we were just talking, and you know, people are Neckface was holding down the shop. Our friend Jeff, who works there, is holding down the shop. And you know, I'm single, I don't have a family here. So I'm like, you know, I'm gonna go down there and check out the scene and see how they're doing, check on everyone, and use my camera as my voice, you know, document this stuff. And I got down there, and you know, the cop cars are already burnt, but now the protests are going and the police are mobilizing. And, you know, I was going to every intersection just to check the vibe from Melrose down to Beverly. And it was the craziest stuff I'd ever seen. I mean, you know, the fires, the, you know, every corner I went to, I was running from rubber bullets. But the protesters at this point, the protesters were peaceful, but the looters were looting. I don't condone that. And I feel terrible for the businesses that are affected by that. But it was a crazy scene. And, you know, I saw that shoe palace get set to fire and just, you know, all of the chaos that ensued that night. And I really remember, you know, feeling all kinds of emotions, you know, like it wasn't good, but it was something that brought this to America's attention. And I think having a pandemic where people are like, I can't just turn off and tune out about this movement was great. And after that, I kept protesting and protesting, and they just got better and better and better and better. And that's what's so terrible about seeing what's happening in Portland and Seattle right now, because protesting is peaceful right now. And, you know, people are, should and always should be allowed to do that. And the fact that they're being, you know, tear gassed and abused is just terrible. It's just such a heartbreaking thing. So I, you know, I don't want to totally take this conversation in that direction, but I will.
Hey, you know what? And there's no option to ignore it. Like, it is what it is. Like, what are you going to switch the subject to? This is where we are at. Like, even the fact that Lollapalooza is happening, you know, and that we can get these respites, right? But the things that we love in music is such a cool little lifeboat. But like, we're still in the midst of the storm. And, you know, to your point, it's so interesting to me that there's this idea that, oh, if we go and show force, right? If we let the people know who's really in charge, this is going to dissipate. And in the wake of sending, you know, clandestine forces into Portland to show force, the people were like, oh, really? You thought that this was going, now there are more people and people coming from so many different walks and ways of life to saying like, no, this is not what we're going to stand for. It's a powerful, powerful time. Did you ever think that you'd see like thousands of white moms in color coordinated t-shirts being like, we will use our privilege to block for you?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was the most beautiful thing about the protesting, especially the peaceful ones, is that I realized I've never seen so many people care about who I am and what I've been through. And that was the greatest feeling, to be like, you know, the protesters, you know, it was such a large amount of white protesters. And just being able to have allies like that and, you know, young, because a lot of older people can't do this because of the risk. It was just great to see the future of our world making a change and making this change. And it's, you know, we're not spring chickens. So, you know, I feel so great because, you know, I think generations after generations have only gotten smarter and better. But I do think this is a movement that we haven't talked about for in a while. You know, Rodney King was our era of it. And, you know, there was a civil rights movement before it. And growing up on the readings of Malcolm and Martin, you know, and in the teachings, you know, this was a really big thing in the 60s. But now you're seeing it bigger than ever because we have the internet, we have social media, you know, you have corporate America getting behind this. This is the first time corporate America has made a stand. And that's been great because it's, you know, the support is endless. You know, you see, unfortunately, a lot of racism and people making terrible decisions. And the attacks on people are just heartbreaking, you know. But you also have to realize the amazing thing is that the number of people who oppose those people, whereas before, I didn't think it was such a vocal thing.
Yeah. Your career, you know, getting to watch it for these last two decades plus has been fascinating for a lot of reasons. A, just your genuine passion and love for skateboarding being, I'm going to get in my car, drive to California and see what that gets me. You got to be under the tutelage and mentorship of legendary photographer, skate photographer, and just brilliant overall photographer and artist in Grant Britain and others. And then you sort of got past that torch to be the guy. A lot of that came not just from your skill set, which is an incredible skill set, but your humility in what you do, and your compassion for your subjects. Like you are there to genuinely connect and showcase human beings. Like you're addicted to humanity. And the way you were able to transition that and connect with other athletes outside of skateboarding is truly like, it's a beautiful story. And I just, how did that really take place for you, where you were able to make that jump from not only shooting the greatest skateboarders on earth, but not just shooting NBA players and icons in sports, but building trust and relationships with them to the point where like they're choosing you to do the same as skateboarders did with you?
You know, I think the reason I shoot what I shoot, from skateboarding to basketball to music, is because I'm a fan, you know. And first and foremost, I think people on the other end of, you know, of my camera can appreciate that, because I try and make them look the best they can be. I try to make them feel comfortable. And I realize none of them want to do full-time photo shoots, so I'm really fast at shooting. But really, it's just being cool, you know, in the sense of being nice and being respectful and pay attention to how everyone's feeling. Those are all the things I say are more important than knowing how to actually focus the camera, because you want to build relationships. And I don't know how I got here, because it wasn't supposed to happen. And that's why I'm so appreciative and so happy with my life. I mean, I'm always just like, I cannot believe this. I like literally cannot believe this. But basketball was a really great opportunity, because I assisted a great photographer, Andy Bernstein, a Laker and Clipper team photographer. And that started when Staples Center opened. So I was assisting him for those first three championships, which was amazing. But at the same time, I had an opportunity. Slam Magazine reached out and I started working for them. So my worlds just collided. And I was taking what I was learning from skateboarding and I was putting it into basketball and basketball photography into my skateboard photography. So they were influencing each other in this way and really giving me a different look in both worlds, that I was able to really just have a different look to my work. So, you know, that was amazing. But the basketball thing, what's really cool is the players that are my age, it was just so easy because we talked about the same things, right? Like Kobe, Tim Duncan, KG, we're all like Chauncey Billups, another one that I'm close with. We're all from the same age, you know. Even Allen Iverson, it was so funny. It was the All-Star in New Orleans. I went down there for a thing, and I brought my twin brother. I have an identical twin brother, Akko. And literally, I was it was so funny. Everywhere I would go, people would be like, huh, so confused, you know, Kyrie, James Harden. But the best was Allen. I saw Allen coming, Iverson, and I kind of like tucked away so he would see Akko first. Like, what's up? Gave him the biggest hug. And my brother was just like, I can't believe Allen Iverson is, you know, and I was just like, Allen, it's me, that's my brother. So, you know, those relationships are great. And Salama, you know how it is having the opportunity to have that access to those games. It's a very intimate relationship because you're in this arena with thousands of people. But when you have the access to the court, you see them when you have the access to the locker room, the hallways. So it's like high school, right? Like you're only going to, you know, you're going to every home game. You're only going to be like, what's up? You're not going to ignore the people. So, you know, and my relationship with Kobe was amazing. And, you know, it's so tragic and terrible. But, you know, I feel so lucky that someone who shines so bright, I was able to spend so much time seeing him win every championship. You know, being able to shoot him and Gigi together in a basketball environment for the cover of Slam Magazine. You know, when you're doing these things, you just think you're just going to see him again. And that's what was so tragic, like knowing that I wasn't going to see him again. I actually had shot him for another job, you know, I think 3 months before he passed away. So, you know, it's something that really breaks my heart because, you know, you're not able to say goodbye. But my relationship with him was just amazing. And I feel so lucky to have that. And that's the same with skateboarding. The fact that, you know, Kareem Campbell and me, when we did the shoot for Thrasher, we sat there and talked forever about like, how did we do it? Like, how are we? He's like, dude, I can't believe you were so patient. And so many people are like, how did he get photos of you? How did he get a hold of you? And I was like, I don't know. I just somehow did, you know? And Kareem is me for a kid with a god. And it's so great to look back and have conversations and, you know, Tony Hawk, but also the new kids, you know, knowing Tyshawn and helping him get a shoe sponsor when he was 14. And now looking at him, you know, 7 years later, and he's already been Skater of the Year. You know, Nakel, all these kids that I've seen grow. So, you know, it doesn't just stop. As long as you have a passion for what you're in, you know, there's no age limit or race limit. It's like everybody's going to be stoked because you're stoked on what they're doing.
Tell me about your first Lollapalooza experience.
Oh, I mean, it was so funny. Me and my brother, what year is the first Lollapalooza? Is it 92?
91.
91.
Yeah.
91. So I'm born in 76. So that would have made me 15.
Yeah.
And it was in Denver. And, you know, I come from like punk rock, like, you know, no sellouts, like... I remember seeing Nirvana open for Dinosaur Jr. before Nevermind. We love Nirvana. We love it.
You remember seeing Nirvana open up for Dinosaur Jr.?
Dinosaur Jr. Now, I was going to shows as a kid. My mom took me and my brother to see Peter Tosh. I still remember it to this day. Like, music's in my blood because of my mom. So going to shows, once I found skateboarding, it was like you found punk rock shows, you know, locally. So you were going to as many shows as you could go to. So by the time Lollapalooza came around, like I had already seen a good amount of shows. I'd already seen Fugazi. I'd already seen the Beastie Boys. I don't think we'd seen them yet, but maybe Primus, Anthrax, and Public Enemy. We'd seen some stuff. Like we had these older friends that would just take us around. They'd always just throw us in the pit because we were like little kids. Like we've been going to shows since we were 13. And Lollapalooza was coming around. In the same summer, there was another festival called Gathering of the Tribes, ironically. We won't talk about that. But, you know, Lollapalooza was coming around. Me and my brother were prep cooks at this Mexican restaurant. And we worked from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. every day for a summer. Every single day. So we weren't really allowed to have days off. And I remember being like, I want, because they were like, you're working short. I mean, it was terrible labor when you look back at it, but you know, they were like, you're working short days, so no days off. And I was like, there's this festival, I need to go to it. And you know, we were huge Jane's Addiction fans. But that first lineup, oh my gosh, like I look back at it, it's like Susie and the Banshees, Rollins Man, Butthole Surfers, Violent Femmes, Ice-T with Body Count was, right. I mean, it was insane, you know? And then for us, Jane's Addiction was such this great, super hugely influential band on our scene. And to see them was just, I mean, at their peak was just amazing. But it was really cool because we weren't into big shows. And I look back, you know, that was my first festival experience, like sitting on a lawn, chilling. Like I'm used to, you go to a show, you're in the pit the whole time, you're up front, that's it. And it's a bummer because I wasn't shooting photos then. It'd been amazing if I would have had a camera then. But the experience really, for growing up in a small town, what Lollapalooza did and the impact it had to bring all these bands that probably wouldn't have come through, you know, or if they did, I wouldn't have been able to go because it was a one-stop shop to see all these great alternative bands and hip hop. You know, hip hop coming around was very rare. So to see Ice-T and OG had just come out, we knew it front to back. I mean, it still is like one of the best festivals I'd ever seen. So it's so great to be a part of it. You know, 29 years later. I mean, that's so crazy to think about. And the lineup this year is insane. So, yeah, I probably 6 years ago, bought an original Lollapalooza shirt that I have. I should have put it on, but yeah, no, I think
the Bad Brains is strong. This is a good choice.
Yeah, I figure I'd keep it 100. This is actually, I can't turn around. This is a tour shirt. I went on tour with them.
What?
Yeah, yeah. I did. It was like a small West Coast tour that I look back and I'm so lucky that I did. We did like Ventura, Orange County, San Diego, LA. And I was on the bus with them and got so close with them. And it was such an amazing experience. I mean, I tried to see the Bad Brains when I was 13. I was 18 and over for quickness. I got to make up for lost time. But, that's, you know, it's such an insane opportunity to be able to see, you know, bands that had such a huge impact on my life. And to know them. And, you know, one of the photos actually was the back cover of their last album. So it was just a huge honor and still is. And, you know, that's why hopefully, you know, things can get back. We're taking a little break from live shows. And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, the people of Lollapalooza are able to bring such a great lineup to us still. But hopefully this is just a temporary thing and we can be back to,
yeah, I just saw some images in New Zealand of people like at a concert with like thousands of people, like it was normal. And I was looking at the photos and I was like, that can't be from right now. I'm like, no, that's from right now. And it gave me a little bit of hope. I'm like, damn, maybe if we get our shit together,
I know,
shit like that can take place. Your favorite artists, musicians, that you've gotten to storytell through your photos?
Who are some?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, the Bad Brains, obviously going on tour with the Bad Brains and being able to shoot them was amazing. I also am very stoked that Ian MacKay has become a friend through skateboarding. So going to the Discord House in D.C., and building a relationship and shooting him is beyond great. I mean, this list is long. Quicksand, a hardcore band that I grew up loving. I'm very close with Walter and Sergio and Alan. But then the newer stuff also, Future Islands, are family to me. So stoked always to shoot those guys. Explosions in the Sky, which are tons of skaters. Most of my connections with these bands are because of skateboarding, and they know my connection. Animal Collective, very, very dear friends. American Football. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, I just did a shoot with the Cold War kids because they reached out. And, you know, Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers has been such an awesome friend, going to Laker games. You know, I just recently have become friends, and it's amazing, with The Edge and his wife. So in December, my last trip to Tokyo, I went to see the Joshua Tree tour for 2 days. So, you know, Lil Wayne, you know, I mean, it's so crazy to, you know, to have these connections. Pharrell, you know, I shot Pharrell, I think, 3 times last year. And every time it's so great to talk to him and see. And then I have to shout out Run to Jewels. That's family to me. Their production team, Wilder and Torbit, but also Jamie and Mike. That's family, you know. I'm so stoked their record when it came out and it did, and the timing couldn't be perfect. And I went out to Shangri-La in Malibu, Rick Rubin's studio, and shot photos and hung out with them. And, you know, even through that, like, you know, become friends with Zach Dale Roach from Rage. And, you know, it was funny, we were at Jamie's birthday party and we just sat and talked skateboarding for like an hour. And he's such a great dude. So, you know, that Run to Jewels family is just, it's just such a great family to be a part of. So, you know, I've been so lucky to know so many musicians now, you know. We went to that Cure Festival in Pasadena. That would have been last fall, I think it was, last October. And it was the funniest thing because Sergio from Quickstand also, he plays bass in Deftones, so I've gotten to meet those dudes. And there's a whole nother story about how I got Tony Hawk tickets in. I mean, they were general admission. They were supposed to be VIPs, but some things got mixed up at the door. But yeah, it was so fun to see The Cure with Tony. And it was so funny because Chino, the singer of Deftones, was like, oh my God. You know, it's just so funny. I've been actually going to Gothic shows with Tony and Wes from Cold Cave American Nightmare. We saw Bauhaus. So, you know, it's you know, music is just something I love so much. So, yeah, it's the relationships with the musicians is, you know, it's unbelievable.
I remember when you first got your first keyboard and you're like, I think I'm going to start a band. And next thing you know, you and your brother, like, had a band that was... I was like, these kids will do whatever it is that they put their mind to.
I love music. And I look back at it, like, that's what's crazy. It's like, yeah, I just was so into jazz. And I was like, I want to be Bill Evans, Ahmad Jamal, and Herbie Hancock. And I took my piano lessons at a trailer park in Oceanside. My very first piano lessons. And
you grew it very, very well. It's funny that you bring up Zach De La Roca. I ended up on a surf trip in Fiji like 6, 7 years ago. And I see this dude walking around the corner on this little tiny island, and it's Zach. And no one told me that he was going to be on this trip with us. And I got to spend a week with him surfing and just talking music. And he was just so, so, so passionate about surfing and about skateboarding. And, you know, he was asking me all this stuff about my dad and his music. And I had no idea that he even knew that. And yeah, just, you know, when you get to spend time with those type of people and you realize, oh yeah, you are everything that I thought you were. It's just like, yes.
I always say, meet your idols. Like, always meet your idols. Don't be scared to meet your idols. Like, keep your expectations low, because you never know what day someone's having, but like always, because that's the thing with Zach, he's so passionate. And you know, the crazy thing about Zach is not a lot of people see him. So that's what's also interesting. You don't know that much, you know? So, you know, I really get so stoked when you meet these people and you realize they're just normal, you know, they're just normal people and they want to talk about normal things. And, you know, if you make that connection with them, they're going to keep that thing going. So, you know, that's why it's like, always never judge a book by its cover, you know, never assume someone's going to be who they are, because that's the other thing. You never know what someone becomes, you know, and that's not your intentions to be nice to people. You should be nice to be nice. But, you know, I shot LeBron James when he was a junior in high school. Did I really think he was going to become LeBron James? I didn't know that, you know? So, and same with skating. Andrew Reynolds was someone everyone kind of made fun of when me and him, both everyone made fun of. So, you know, Andrew's an amazing story of someone who was not cool and became one of the best skateboarders of all time.
I'm so glad that I bought that print from you. When you were raising money for COVID, I got the iconic frontside flip heard around the world of Andrew Reynolds, and it's up on my wall.
Thanks to contributing to that. I was, you know, that's the thing. It's like with fundraising, COVID really made me aware, because I don't really sell prints often at all. So it made me aware, like, I can do this to make money. Yeah, I don't have like a web store. You can't just buy prints. So I'm really excited that this is the outlet that I do it in. And then that way the money can go to a good cause.
My last question for you, because we could do this all day. And we'll do it again.
100%.
For a kid, or a young person right now who's got a passion but is sort of struggling, especially in this time of sort of super unsurety. Like, imagine if we were going through this as teenagers. What kind of advice or perspective would you give them about how to pursue their passions, and why it's valuable to take the risk and pursue what you love as a to just like safety and security?
I would say, you know, for someone starting out, you know, in this time, it's a pandemic. You know, what the new normal or the old normal will be is still to be determined. But staying positive, you know, the good thing about a passion is surrounding yourself with it. So skateboarding, something that I love, I would go to this skate spot, hang out with other skaters, you know, and then now there's skate parks everywhere. So hang out at the skate park. And in skating, skate shops are amazing. So I got a job at a skate shop, and that was huge for me, because I was then able to turn that into moving to California. You know, you meet sales reps, you meet people in the industry. So, you know, I always say that the same with cooking. Like, if I loved cooking and food, get a job at a restaurant. It's putting yourself, you know, you don't have to feel the pressure to be the best. You don't have to feel like if I love skateboarding, I need to be Tony Hawk. I mean, don't ever put a limit on yourself, but you start by putting yourself in that environment and everything will grow. You know, and that's music. Like, if you like listening to music, work at a record store. If you like playing music, work at Guitar Center. You know, for me, what I have found is that if you are doing what you love and are compassionate about, you're never working a day in your life. So if you're passionate about something, put yourself in that work environment and you'll be happy every single day, because that's what it was for me. You know, if with photography, I would honestly be working at a camera store or be a rep for a camera company. I'd be talking about what I love every day. So when I wake up and do what I do, I'm going to be inspired just because that's the thing that I love.
I love it, man. That is sound advice. And I can't believe we're both going to be on a Lollapalooza t-shirt together.
Dude, is there merch? Do you know?
There's merch. We get it locked. Trust me.
I'm already like, if someone can get me high res art straight up,
bootleg that shit.
I am like, just that Instagram post.
You got it coming. I really appreciate you taking the time, man. It's fantastic to see you. And also, just totally unrelated, somebody has been spending time on their skateboard during COVID because you've been dropping some heat.
Oh, man. I mean, no, I suck, but
whatever.
I still love skating, you know? Like, I cannot not skate. So, I
love it, dude. You got me inspired.
So, all right. Well, much love. Thank you. This was super easy. Let's do it again. Let's catch up personally. My phone's on.
My dude.
Okay. Bye.
Peace.
It takes a village to bring you the What Shapes Us podcast. Our incredible graphic design team at Parsons Branding. Music by the one and only Hugh Masekela and my band Alakazam. It is edited by Ernesto Hurtado and Will Broughton. Produced by yours truly, Salema Mabena Masekela, and directed by Ernesto Hurtado, aka Machete, and myself, Salema Masekela. The What Shapes Us podcast is a Rebel Talk Network production.